Hey there, sports history fan. Arnie Chapman here from the Sports History Network. Now, before you jump into this episode, I wanted to share with you an exciting giveaway we have going on with Home Field Apparel. We have a digital $50 gift card to homefieldapparel.com for one lucky fan of the Sports History Network. All you got to do is head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways to sign up. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways.
College football was entering into a new era in the season of 1931. There were some rule changes on blocking and some in communication to both opponents and officials. We have that, and we have who was the best team in 1931 college football. We have these answers and more coming up in just a moment.
This is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, a podcast that covers the anniversaries of American football events throughout history on a day-to-day basis. Your host, Darren Hayes, is podcasting from America's North Shore to bring you the memories of the gridiron one day at a time. So as we come out of the tunnel of the Sports History Network, let's take the field and go no huddle through the portal of positive gridiron history with PigskinDispatch.com.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at SportsHistoryNetwork.com.
Hello, my football friends. This is Darren Hayes of PigskinDispatch.com. Welcome once again to the Pigpen, your portal to positive football history. And welcome to another edition of the Football History Rewind as we go through football, college, and professional levels year by year, all the way from history through the modern day. We are in the 1931 season, and it's a dawning of a new era in college football and professional football, but we're going to be talking about the college game in this edition of part number 68 of the Football History Rewind. And the new era of the modernization era, the transitional period from the days of the leather helmets and the roaring 20s into today's more modern equipment, and just that whole transgression and transition to get into that period. So we'll talk about that in just a moment. But before we do, let's make sure you are aware of our daily newsletter. We have one that comes out each and every day, 6:30 a.m., straight into your email inbox. You can cancel at any time, and it's totally free. Everything is going on in the pig pen, Pigskin Dispatch, Jersey Dispatch, Orville Mulligan, Sports Writer, and many items from the Sports History Network as well. We'll also send you some little gems in that newsletter, maybe a photo of the day, some news that's coming out, and maybe some other articles that I've written around the web on some other sites as well. We'll try to share all that with you in one nice, neat package. So sign up very easily at the show notes of this very podcast or the top of pigskindispatch.com or jerseydispatch.com. Now, let's get into the 1931 college football season. It was somewhat of a somber time in collegiate football. As we learned in the last few editions of the series, the memorials to the late, great Newt Rockne were reflected in the rule books themselves. The discussion in this edition will go slightly differently as we have access to Spalding's official football rules book. That's football with two separate words. Of the National Collegiate Athletic Association for the year 1931, and permission uses contents from the NCAA, and we definitely thank them for that. This article will be a great snapshot of the odd blocking rules of the time and some insight on how trash talk was dealt with then. And we're also going to talk about some of the great teams from the collegiate era of 1931. First, let's get into some of the rules and the illegal blocks in 1931. And it's a fascinating look back at history just to see how far our game has evolved. And it's a credit to the hard work and the foresight that many of our fathers of football had to make the gridiron game what it is today. And we have a great snapshot from that Spalding rules book of a figure number 17 demonstrating what illegal use of the hands and arms of a player of the team in possession of the ball was. And now, it shows the illegal use of the hands in that era, and we of today's era must remember that this was not too long ago when the extended arm technique of blocking became legal in football. Our research shows that the National Federation of High School Sports adopted the current rule of offensive blockers being able to extend their arms to a maximum of 45 degrees away from their bodies, rather than their arms having to contact their person back in 1977, so a little over 50 years, or almost 50 years ago, a little less than 50 years ago, that's rules not that old. So prior to that, the teams on the offense, their blockers, had to have their hands into their body and block like that, almost like you see the old little plastic football figures that you used to play with. The blockers would have their hands up, their elbows out, and that's how you blocked. You just sort of got in the way of your opponent. Now we know you can, offensive guys can put their hands on them, not closed hands, not grasping anything, although they many times do, and that is technically holding, but just to use the palms of your hands to ward off opponents and defenders trying to get at your people. Now, the caption under the illustration 17 that we have from 1931 refers the reader to rule number 10, section 1, article 2. And that rule from 1931 reads like this. It says, quote, "The runner may ward off opponents with his hands and arms, but no other player possessing the ball may use his hands or arms unless the arms are close to the body to obstruct an opponent." Now, players of the 21st century should appreciate what blockers prior to 1977 had to do. Their job was made much easier with the extended arm rules to ward off defenders. Of course, they suffered a big blow in 1981 NFHS rules when the blocks below the waist from the front cross body blocks became illegal, except in the free blocking zone. And now we alluded to it earlier, but this illegal block is alien to us. It should come as no surprise that illustration 17 is an illegal block in our era too. At the high school level, NFHS rule 2-3-2A3, the forearms cannot be extended more than 45 degrees away from the blocker's body. So figure 17 has the, those that can't see the picture, his arms are totally outstretched, the elbows are locked on a straight arm, the arms are straight out in front of you, almost like you're going to push the wall, but he's pushing an opponent. Well, those elbows have to be at 45 degrees and, not a straight arm sticking out there. Now, illustration 24 may be deemed legal in the common era of football. The viewer could judge that the blocker, number two's arms are less than 45 degrees from his body during contact. It's hard to tell. It was, however, a violation of 1931's rules to a legal block. And I mentioned it earlier in the excerpt of the ruling, blocker ruling, that blocker number two's arms were not close to his body's, thus he was illegal back in 1931. We would probably count that as a legal block today, and you probably see it on almost every offensive play. Now, there were some other rules that changes in 1931. Today's rules deal sternly and quite specifically with what is acceptable in regarding communication between opponents. Words like taunting, baiting, and profanity make it clear that ill-fated rhetoric aimed at officials and opponents will not be tolerated. But what was it like back in the 1931 season? Well, we took this excerpt from the Football Code of 1931 and the smooth, common-sense style in which it was written. Now, here's an excerpt from that. And they say, quote, "In talking to your opponents, if it falls short of being abusive or insulting, is not prohibited by rules, partly because it ought not be necessary, and partly because no rules can make gentlemen out of the mucker." Yes, that's right, they said mucker with an M. "No good sportsman is ever guilty of cheap talk to his opponents. The rules were very personal back then and aimed to talk right to the players, just as an official or coach would speak to them about the rule." Now, they also had some verbiage on talking to officials, and the 1931's rules deals with how players should deal with officials. Now, it says, quote, "When an official imposes or makes a decision, he simply does his duty as he sees it. He is on the field representing the integrity of the game of football. And in his decision, even though he may have made a mistake in judgment, is final and conclusive and should be accepted. Even though you may think the decision is mistaken, take your medicine and do not whine about it. Let your captain do the talking if anything is need to be said. That is his business. Yours is to keep quiet and to play the game," unquote. Commentary from 2008 on this code and message to the players. That is very much well said. 2023, yes, still well said. You know, mind your business. The official makes a thing. That's the coach, the captain's job to argue and to plead your case of getting maybe an overturned or instant replay in our day and age. Now, let's take a look at the 1931 college football season with these rules imposed. They really didn't have much effect on it. There was no big stories of the blocking being a major problem or the new communication efforts, nothing going on there. But there was some good football being played. The 1931 college football season can be defined by one game in particular, the annual Southern Cal versus Notre Dame contest. USC took their 6-1 record to South Bend to face the 6-0-1 Fighting Irish squad. This is middle of the season, late in the season now. Notre Dame had not lost in 26 games, but most of these were under the now-deceased Coach Rockne. Hunk Anderson, who is now in charge of the Irish Critters, held a 14-0 lead in the fourth quarter against Southern Cal. And you remember Hunk Anderson. He was a former guard that played for Newt Rockne in Notre Dame, and he had quite a professional career as well. This standout was inducted in the College Football Hall of Fame, and he allegedly played under a fake name for the Canton Bulldogs in the pro level in the 1920-21 seasons. But Anderson would later argue that he played in one exhibition game, maybe two, not anything meaningful. But we may never know the truth. But however, it is confirmed that Anderson played 39 NFL regular season games while starting 32 of them from 1922 to 1926 as a member of the Cleveland Indians franchise and the Chicago Bears NFL franchise. He was a good enough pro that the Hall of Fame retroactively selected Hunk to the 1920s All-Decade team as an interior lineman. And besides coaching the Fighting Irish, he stepped in after leaving St. Louis University, where he coached 1928-1929. Then he went to his alma mater, Notre Dame, coached for 3 years. And then went to North Carolina State in 1934 through 36 and compiled a career in college football. It was 34-34-4 between the three schools. And from 1942 to 1945, he was hired by George Halas to become the head coach of the Chicago Bears, even leading the franchise to win the 1943 National Football League title. So Hunky Anderson definitely had a great resume to take over the Fighting Irish. And like we said, his team was winning 14-0 going into the fourth quarter against Southern Cal. It's a very essential game to claim the national championship. The Trojans were not giving up, though. Southern Cal rallied in the final stanza, kicking a 33-yard field goal with a minute left for a comeback win, 16-14, and a victory. The Trojans won out their remaining games, defeating Washington 44-7, a very tough Georgia team, 60-0 in a blowout, and one loss to Tulane. They beat them 21-12 in the Rose Bowl game. Now, most experts in later years have dubbed the USC Trojans as the nation's top team for 1931 with these facts. But there were other teams to consider, too. We mentioned earlier the Tulane Green Wave. They lost to USC in the Rose Bowl. They finished with an 11-1 record and only lost to USC. Well, since they played head-to-head with the Trojans and lost, they too, just like Notre Dame, have no claim to the crown. USC overtakes them there. That brings up the 8-1 Pitt Panthers. Coach Jock Sutherland's 11 did suffer one loss, and it was at the hands of Notre Dame. So they too must sort of go under that principle of USC beat Notre Dame beat Pitt, USC's a better team, USC gets the top billing in that. But possibly the most interesting case could be the 9-0-1 Tennessee Volunteers team. Coach Robert Neyland led his Chargers to beat Alabama and Georgia. However, the Kentucky Wildcats rained on their parade in late November with a 6-6 tie on a muddy field in Lexington. Could this stellar record take them above the one-loss Trojans? Well, though possible, it is not probable, as Southern Cal's strength of schedule was a little bit higher caliber of competition than that of the Vols in 1931, even though they were a very good team. So I think the consensus is from most everybody that's looked back at that is USC was the best team in college football 1931. And that takes us to the end of this part number 68 in our look at the college game in 1931. Our next football history rewind, which will be next week, we will talk about the 1931 professional circuit of football. And but we have plenty of stories to go around before then. So make sure you check out tomorrow. We will be having Timothy P. Brown of Football Archaeology on to talk about another interesting subject, and we, as we do every Tuesday. And we have a lot of great things happening on the Sports Jersey Dispatch podcast this week. We're going to be talking about some interesting items, getting ready for the baseball season, maybe a little basketball, and a little bit of some of the other sports as well. So we thank you for joining us today. We hope you'll join us once again next time on the Sports Jersey Dispatch podcast and on the Pigskin Dispatch podcast. Until next time, everybody, have a great Gridiron Day.
We're taking a peek over at the chains and the down marker. It's fourth and long. We're going to have to punt the ball and get on out of here, but we'll have another series tomorrow for your football history headlines, so be sure to tune in.
We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. PigskinDispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast. PigskinDispatch.com is a proud affiliate of the Sports History Network, the headquarters of sports yesteryear.
Hey there, Sports History fan. This is Arnie Chapman, a.k.a. the Football History Dude, and I wanted to thank you for stopping by to listen to another episode here on the Sports History Network. Our podcasters are passionate about uncovering and sharing sports stories from yesteryear. And if you didn't know it already, we have over 30 shows across the network covering all sorts of sports history topics. In fact, here's a glimpse into one of our awesome podcasts here on the network.
Do you wish you knew more about the 100 seasons of the NFL? You're in luck, because you found the Football History Dude podcast, where each episode is a journey back in time to learn about the rich history of the NFL. From the founding of the league in an auto showroom, all the way to what it is today, America's favorite sport and a behemoth of an industry. My name is Ernie Chapman. Football is my passion, and I want you to come along with me each week to explore the yesteryear of the gridiron. So hop on board my DeLorean, and let's get this baby up to 88 miles per hour.
How about that? I bet you're super hyped to go listen to that new podcast, right? Well, to learn about this show and all the other podcasts on the network, head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Head over there today to find your next favorite sports history podcast.